Now, as we mentioned, the topics of amnesties for incidents during the Troubles have been covered extensively in the news recently, including on this programme, after it was revealed that the British government proposed a statute of limitations on security forces during the conflict. The issue has come up again. This time it's a call from some senior Tory and Labour MPs for amnesties across the board, both paramilitary and security force members. And they've written to Theresa May, as I've said, urging her indeed to stop anyone anyone from facing a trial. Now, I want to speak to a man who lost his father in what's known as the Ballymurphy Massacre, John Taggart. John, good morning.
Morning, Frank.
John, how much does this concern you that there's cross-party support for this initiative?
Well, it's very concerning. This here campaign has been coming for almost 2 years now, and it's a build-up and it's been growing in momentum. And it's not just across the water, it's at the UP and the Ulster Unions on this side of the water also, who effectively are lying to their community when they're talking about statute of limitations. But when it comes around to statute of limitations, it's basically an amnesty for all. And at the start of your programme, even yourself, is getting the message there that is an amnesty for all, that the damn politicians who represent different communities are calling for.
And do you have any understanding of where people would be in relation to trying to draw a line to move on? Time suggests that no one's going to face any time in prison or any significant reprimand for what they did. So it could be argued that there isn't really a point in pursuing any of these people.
Well, I would argue that right away.
Can I bring you a wee bit closer to your phone, John?
Well, I would argue that right away, Frank. we intend to bring soldiers to the court. We intend them to be investigated, which they never were. If you look around, most of these incidents, more than 50% happened between 1970 and 1973, when the RUC at the time didn't investigate. And even till today, most of these murders, crimes have never been investigated. So we would hope that we, with the justice system we are gaining confidence in, we'll go down the right road for bringing these soldiers and made the account of what they've done all these years ago.
What would it mean to you personally to get justice?
It would mean a change of history. And that's exactly what it is. If my kids, my grandkids, my great-grandkids, when they come, look down in history and look at that Danny Taggart and look at all the families, all the ones who were murdered in Ballymurphy. And it's official. I've seen the documentation, and they are down as terrorists. And that's what it's about. We need to change what is known as my father's not a terrorist, and we would change what's official at the moment, and that they were innocent civilians murdered by gun-toting power troopers, gone into the community, and I mean the whole community suffered over these days. It just wasn't these 11 victims, the whole community, where you had 600 powers absolutely running amok. The brutality of on the locals, you couldn't describe it. You couldn't describe it on the radio station.
Many times I've heard descriptions of what they did and how pressurised people felt and how under siege people felt, how vulnerable local communities felt when the paras were there. It was often said during the Troubles, it was a common theme of conversation, that the parachute regiment was the wrong regiment to be in Northern Ireland. They simply weren't capable of carrying out the duties that they were supposed to carry out.
They were put in to carry out of what they were sent in to do. That's exactly what they were sent in to do. And you look at the local members of the security forces on them days, and they will tell you the exact same thing that I am, and more stories about the brutality of the powers on the local servicemen. And high-ranking politicians could tell you stories about that too, who served in the forces as well. But they thought themselves to be elite. And see anybody on that, the name they had for everybody, UDR, all the regiments, is crop hats. That's the way they looked at the rest of their regiments and the British Army. And they thought they were elite, and thought they were given immunity then, and I would hope that through all these years, we would bring them to account now.
But do you think, is that a fair analysis of a highly respected regiment, or indeed is it actually an urban myth about the Paras?
Well, we'll stop where we were talking about the highly respected. Well, where's the respect from? I don't see any respect from other members of security forces. For people like ourselves.
Well, in fairness, for the point of argument and for debate and discussion, John, there's a respect for the British Parachute Regiment across the world for what they've achieved in theatres of war for generations. You don't have to go very far in this part of the world to find people who have absolutely zero respect for the British Parachute Regiment. But this is why I asked the question.
There's both sides of it, but if you look upon the ones that they are brutalised, I can remember as a teenager, maybe from 13 onwards, when the Paras and other regiments came in into our area, you were due a beating. No, it was like a normal thing that these soldiers were once to get to you in a dark alleyway around a corner, you were going to get a beating for no reason at all. So it's obvious that people like ourselves who grew up during the conflict are going to be thinking, I guess, because we had seen it at first hand. We know at first hand what the Paras and the other regiments were capable of. So it's maybe two-sided by the Parachute Regiment's families who lost loved ones. But it's all down to from your own experience, and the experience of the local community was the brutality of the Parachute Regiment. That's all to be remembered by here.
Are you ultimately looking for justice, or is there a hint of revenge in what you're seeking at the moment?
Oh, there's no revenge. There's no forgiveness, put it like that, but it's not revenge. Like I said at the start, and there's many campaigners like ourselves on both sides of the community. It's clearing their loved one's name. My father was no terrorist. I'd not be looking down any revenge for either him or my brother, who was murdered by the IRA. It's all about clearing the name. That's what the campaign was for my brother also, to clear his name.
And is your campaign as hand in hand with other campaigns as people might think it is or not? Because I'm just looking at a campaign this morning, which is in the news practically every day, justice for the people killed in the Birmingham pub bombings. You know, could you stand side by side with those English people who are looking for justice?
Of course. We'd have correspondence with all campaigns. Frank, there was a programme on BBC last night, and it was about the conflict in 1993-94. If you'd have turned that down and you'd seen the infernals, you wouldn't have knew who it was. See the grief on the faces of their loved ones and their children is completely the same, and it's.
Is that a pop music program you're talking about, where they put the story of the troubles to pop music? 1993. It was two evenings ago.
It may have been. I actually missed the start of it. It was
But was it like a history of 1993?
That's right. Yeah.
I saw this, and it was a reminder to me of the absolute savagery that existed in this country and the hurt and the heartache that stretched right across all divides and all communities.
Well, I was thinking along the same lines that it was so sad where we have come from now. But if you look at the people who's at the infernals and say, we'll draw a line on the sand, you aren't going to get anywhere. You'll get the sexiest. Look at the sexy answer from them, as you would from me. You just can't go on and leave your loved one branded a terrorist. I just can't do it.
Okay, John, I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you very much. John Taggart, who lost his father in the Ballymurphy massacre. 90-333-105, 077-66-105-105. Let me see. I've got to speak to whoever's on line two. And it's good morning. Let me see. It's line two. We had a little problem with my telephone system this morning, but I've no doubt that we'll get it sorted. How are you? Go ahead.
How are you doing, Frank?
Yes, very good.
I just wanted to ask John McTaggart there. I was born up in New Barnsley, and we were put out of our homes, 900 people, by Catholics up in Ballymurphy. Now, in 1960, 1970, we had to move the whole 900 houses. Now, I would like to ask them, who was the Ballymurphy people fighting with then when they put the Protestants out of New Barnsley? Who actually were they fighting with then? I'm not saying his father was fighting or throwing stones or paddle bombs or something. But they kept fighting and fighting and fighting, throwing paddle bombs, shooting at the army and everything. What does he want the army to do? Why is he putting all the blame on the paratroopers?
Well, maybe because his father was walking down the street and a paratrooper came in, aimed a gun at him and shot him dead, as the paratroopers did with about 10 other people in Ballymurphy. It seems like incredibly rough justice because some other people may have been involved in sectarian activity in the interface area for the forces of the state to come in and assassinate people. That doesn't seem like justice to me.
No, it's not just. I'm not saying it's not justice. And I'm saying as well that it was wrong for people to be shot dead.
Yeah, but I can't understand why you would be equating the terrible acts that happened in interface areas around 69-70 on both sides of the community, those terrible, terrible acts, why you'd be equating that with some form of justification for the paratroopers coming in and shooting innocent people in Ballymurphy?
The paratroopers didn't go into Ballymurphy and shoot innocent people.
I think you might find, actually, believe it or not, that they did.
Well, Was the IRA not shooting at the paratroopers?
Regardless of the situation at any one specific time, and there's no doubt the IRA did shoot at the paratroopers on occasions in Ballymurphy, but there were on many an occasion in Ballymurphy.
On occasions? Yes, it was every day of the week.
Yes, but hold on to finish this. There were people shot dead in Ballymurphy when there was no shooting happening at the paratroopers.
Frank, come on. Now, look, I grew up in the conflict, okay?
Yeah, but is your understanding of it that everyone who was shot dead in Ballymurphy was either a gunman or someone caught in crossfire?
No. You didn't hear... what I says was that it was wrong for the people who were shot dead. It was wrong. But it was wrong for that community for what they were doing. They can't have it both ways.
There's no one from get-go here justified anything done by the IRA in this conversation from 9 o'clock this morning. No one has justified the IRA at all on the programme. We're talking about innocent people who were shot by the paratroopers and a man whose father was shot calling for justice and politicians saying there may be an amnesty, there may be a statute of limitations, and he may not get his justice. That's the story. So do you feel he's entitled to continue to search for justice, or should we draw a line under it?
No, he's right to search for justice. But it's also right to turn around and say that the paratroopers did not go in and shoot innocent people dead.
Okay, that is your belief on it, and we could go around the houses arguing about it day and night, but I appreciate your input. Thank you. Let me speak to a lady who's on line 3, who's available to have a conversation with us this morning as well. Good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, Frank, my blood's boiling. Lower that down a wee minute because I can't hear myself. Again, as you say, Frank, we can go up and down and in and out about how many people has been murdered, innocent people killed. We all know that on both sides of the community, there's been terrible tragedies done, right? I am really shaken here with anger. That man got on and said they were put out of their homes in New Barnsley. I'm from Ballymurphy. I was there in the conflict that night. Them people from New Barnsley, the majority of them, was brought down to Spring Martin. There was a new house in the estate. And they were all put into new houses in Spring Martin. And when they left the houses in New Barnsley, which if they had been put out, they were able to twist. Well, I could go in the same in my yard. They twisted the wires and they tempered the electric. But anyway, the heel of the reel is, that man's after turned around saying they were put out. A lot of them people who I still know, and they used to come up from Spring Martin to the shops at the top of the White Rock, and they were told they weren't allowed to come up to the shops because, believe it or not, in them days, as people know, people used to get this, they called a tick out of the shops, in McAvoy's shop. And it was a couple of wee women used to get out of it who were Protestant women. My mummy and they all went to bingo with these people from New Barnsley, and they were all put out. And they were told they weren't allowed up the top of the White Rock again. Now, that man saying about innocent people, anybody who had any guns or anything was taken out of, they were scattered out of Ballymurphy that night because they knew what was happening, the Paras came in. There was two soldiers around our back, and you called them Mike and Alan, and I'll never forget it. And they were told to pull out, and they put the butts of the rifle through all our windows at the back. We found rubber bullets in the chip pan that had bounced all over the scullery, as you called it then, the walls. We just happened to be looking out the window. The one is through the ones in the holes in the window, and the Paras was what this man, I can't say the language what he said. He said, "We are the English, we shoot our guns and then they run." And he's seen us and he says, "Get them bees there." Now, the way our house was situated, the back door and the living room door was an alignment. Frank, the bullet came through our window and my daddy, God love him, just leaned forward. We were so lucky, and the bullet went through my daddy's chin, and my daddy was sitting in the house. Me and my sister was going to try and get him up to the glory hole because we knew the Brits was going to come in and search the houses and lift my daddy. For that man to say that the IRA was there shooting, and see that man, there was one of me and Mr. Corr, he was out looking for his son, and he was shot dead, and it took that man 3 weeks to die. They shot him with dum-dum bullets. They were banned then, and that man, it took him 3 weeks to die. And for him to go on and say there was IRA, they were shooting the dog. We were starving, Frank. We were queuing for two. We had no food. Shops, everything was closed, and the people from the falls and everywhere were sending us up food. Naturally, we had to give it to women with babies. No, they told us, the Paras told us, shoot the dogs and eat them. Now, and for that man to go on there and say that, I lived through it too. And they were innocent people that was shot that night, so they were. So the priest and all was shot, waving the white flag and out to give somebody the last rites, so the priest was shot. What are you talking about? Oh, please, I'm sorry. I'm getting very, very emotional here because I was there when it happened.
Would you accept, however, the point that the gentleman, the second gentleman who was on, made, that there were Protestant families who were forced out of areas and Protestant homes were burned the same way as Catholic families
not
were forced out?
Not in New Barnsley or Moyard. Ian Paisley came up that day. I was there. The helicopter landed. See the pylon at the top of the White Rock? The helicopter landed out there, and Ian Paisley got out and directed the people down to Spring Martin, Frank. They were put into all brand new houses.
But they were forced out of the area.
They weren't forced out, Frank. They got new houses. They maybe felt as if they were forced out. There was no men in Ballymurphy to force anybody. And I'll tell you better still. There was one that seized the night of the conflict. The Protestant fellas and all come down from Moyard. They hit into Ballymurphy. And the Brits come up and they went straight into Ballymurphy and beat the crap out of the people in Ballymurphy. So they did. They say they were. I'm actually still very friendly with some of the people who lived in New Barnsley Green and who lived in the Grove. And they would tell you they loved their wee houses, but they moved down to Spring Martin. There was new houses for them down Spring Martin.
It's a very sad story that you tell. Whether you're,
Frank,
whether
I looked through it. My daddy was shot through the chin. There was plastic bullets laying in our kitchen. And in the name of sweet God, how can that man turn around and say that?
Yes, I understand why you're emotional about it, and I absolutely take your description of what you saw, which was barbaric. But I think we do have to factor in points made by other people who've looked at this and investigated it. The Protestant people in the west of the city were forced out as well. That's my understanding of it.
Yes.
It isn't your interpretation.
Yes,
of it.
Maybe, Frank, maybe they were forced out after what happened to the Catholics. I'm not saying. I was 17 at the time. I was 17. And all I lived with was going about with the CS gas and everything. You had to go about covering your face and everything with the CS gas. Because that's all they'd done. They just shot the CS gas everywhere. So
okay.
They did.
Okay.
I mean, that night, okay, there maybe been people, but for that man to go on and say they were innocent people, and I know Joe Carr because he lived in our street. Mr. Carr lived in our street, number 23, Divismore Crescent. And he was, 24, Divismore Crescent, and he was shot and he was out looking for his son. So he was. No.
I really appreciate your call. I really do, because you're the voice of a victim and a voice that needs to be listened to.
Frank, but what I'm saying is it's happened on both sides. I'm not going on here and saying it was the poor Catholics. It's happened. There's been atrocities on both sides. But for some a Protestant man here, I have very good Protestant friends, to get on and say that it didn't happen. It did happen. It did happen, Frank.
And just very briefly, very, very briefly, because I do need to move on, do you understand the call for an amnesty, for drawing a line under it all, or do you want to see people in court?
I would like to see justice being done, Frank, on the innocent people. The Ballymurphy people who were shot dead. My God, if it was my mummy, I'd say, I know how I felt that night when my daddy was shot through the chin. I was standing with a hoover, pulling my horse, I was standing with a hammer, and see if a Brit had come in the area, if my daddy had killed him.
All right, okay, that's a woman speaking from the heart and speaking from the experience of the Troubles in the 1970s. And that's obviously what she experienced. And that's how bad it seemed to her. That's how the experience was that she was going through. And I'm sure there are many people the length and breadth of the country who can tell similar horrific stories in relation to whatever was visited upon them and from whomever.
The Frank Mitchell phone-in on U105, listening to you.
90-333-105, 077-66-105-105. Frank, my parents lived in Moyard Park. We weren't put out, but we felt we needed to go. There's two sides to every story. This one says, Frank, the woman on the radio is telling the truth. I was there. I took food to those people who were surrounded. And this one says, Frank, this girl is right, you have on the radio. Let her talk. And Gail says, Frank, be careful, you weren't there. I wasn't there either, says Gail in Ballymurphy. Right, 90-333-105. The only way you find out what exactly happened, Gail, is to listen to people. But there's no arguing with the death toll. You've got to keep that in mind, Gail. There's no arguing with the death toll. 90-333-105, 077-66-105-105. Good morning. Loads of texts and emails coming through on a whole variety of topics here, including the issue with regards to attempts on the Prime Minister and the fear I think some of you have. You're worried and concerned to a greater or a lesser extent about our politicians generally. Some of the comments that are coming through there, I can't read them all out, but you do think that politicians maybe are more vulnerable now than they have been. Some of the comments that are coming up. I want to speak to Robert, who's on line four. Robert, good morning.
Hello, Frank.
Yes, Robert, this is in relation to Ballymurphy.
Yes, I'd just like to say that lady was on talking. Now, before I say anything, I have no love for powers or soldiers or anything, because there was I have no interest in that sort of thing. But what it was, I lived in New Barnsley. We moved from the slums of the Lower Shankill. We moved up to New Barnsley. We got a nice new house, a bathroom and a garden in the back, looking on to the hills. We loved it. And for that lady to say that we weren't put out is a total lie, because what was there, like 500-800 people at the bottom of our street doing, trying to get up this. And the thing was, as regards to shiny new houses we got in Spring Mountain, I moved from the slums and Shankill back up to New Barnsley, and then we had to move back down to the slum to the Shankill again. So when I hear that lady saying there was nice new shiny houses waiting us, it really makes my blood boil. And I have every sympathy for the people who was killed in Ballymurphy. I have nothing to do with that at all. But it just annoys me when people say that the people in New Barnsley weren't put out. it's a total lie and fabrication.
I think we do have to accept the facts here. And the facts were that Catholics were burned out of their homes and forced out of their homes, and Protestants were burned out of their homes and forced out of their homes. That happened in the 70s in Belfast. That's a fact, and I think we have to accept that.
Yes, it is a fact. And it's been well highlighted about the Kashmir Road and all these other places, quite rightly. But when it comes to New Barnsley, all of a sudden they moved themselves out. Paisley was up at a barn and brought them into new houses. And going back later, there was a helicopter up at the Paling. I'd never seen any helicopter up at the Paling. I used to play in the Palings up at the back of the green.
Yeah, I think the story gets slightly exaggerated the more times it's told, with how people arrived or what mode of transport Ian Paisley was using or what an individual may have been doing at any specific time. You hear a slight variety from people who weren't actually there at the moment it happened. And there may be some language used by our contributor that would have exaggerated exactly what Ian Paisley was doing, or indeed what another person that she made reference to may have been doing or not doing at any specific time in her description. But one thing that you do have to accept as absolute gospel is what happened in her own home. She's describing what she was a witness to. The bullet coming into her home, the bullet hitting her father in the face, her determination to fight back if the army were to come through the door, albeit she was going to fight back with a piece of Hoover tubing, I think is what she said, and her anger at what the paratroopers had said to her in the street and how they broke the windows when they were being pulled out and moved on to the next location. They broke the windows with the rifle butts. Those are descriptions of what she saw. So we have to listen to that testimony.
Listen, Frank, what that lady saw, what she said about what happened to her father, I wouldn't dispute that in the slightest, because I believe that happened. But when she was talking about New Barnsley, then what she said, it just annoyed me, because I was there in New Barnsley. I loved living in New Barnsley. And to say that we weren't put out and it was nice houses when I was in Spring Mountain, well, that's just not true, because we moved from the slums of Lower Shankill and we were put down. We had to stay in Glenwood School at the top of the Shankill, and then we ended up at a two up, two down house, something like what we moved from originally.
So you were at that time a refugee. You were a Protestant refugee at that time,
yes.
The same way there were Catholic refugees, but you were, and very often we forget whenever we are highlighting the refugee crisis. There's a lot of talk, and including on this programme, understandably, about the number of Catholic refugees there were and who were moved out and had to go to places like, they actually stayed at the Butlins camp in the Republic of Ireland at one point, so they had to move out. Now, we sometimes overlook the status of the Protestant refugee, and you were one of those people.
Yes, we had to stay in Glenwood School till my mother and father had to try and find a house for us. And what happened was, the only house, we're not talking about houses away in the east of the city, which, coming from Shankill, was just like, you know, a different world to me. So they ended up, we had to go down to the Lower Shankill, and actually we moved into a house literally on the Peace Lane, on Beverly Street, which is the Peace Lane. And we moved out, and the troubles from the Lower Falls, so the back of our house was looked onto the Lower Falls, and we know how bad the trouble was at that particular time, 1970, 71. You know, it was really bad. But as regards with that happened, that lady's father and stuff, I don't dispute that at all.
Okay.
I've lost members of my own family. My brother was murdered by Republicans. He was never in any organization. He was murdered simply because of his religion. And he was just convenient at the time. And my brother-in-law was murdered. And his wife, who was my sister, she was killed shortly after. As things happened, you know, everybody's suffering in these troubles, and I would like to see everyone getting justice, but as regards an amnesty, there is an amnesty. Like, people, 2 years for murdering somebody, like, that is an amnesty, isn't it, really?
Robert, I really appreciate your input. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I actually find it almost impossible to bring a conversation like the one we're having there with Robert, or the one we had with the lady a short time ago, to a conclusion, because these are voices of victims. This man ended up telling us he lost 3 relatives in the Troubles, and the lady saw her father shot in his own front room. These voices must be listened to. And I walk a thin line here on the radio between, you know, inviting people on to have a conversation with me and then moving on to the next person. There's a thin line between doing that, as you would do with most topics, and individuals coming on who are absolutely in agony because of what they went through, the experiences that they had. And it's imperative for me not to treat them as just another caller. These people are serious victims of what they lived through in the hellhole that was Northern Ireland of the 1970s. David's got a point. Good morning, David. David, even with what I've said beforehand, I do need you to be brief, actually, David, if you can.
Okay, I was lucky. I grew up in Bangor. I missed a lot of this. But if there's going to be justice for all the soldiers who shot and killed innocent and not innocent Catholic people, and also some lawyer, have we not already had an amnesty for the terrorists through the Good Friday Agreement, and therefore an amnesty for all the soldiers? Sure is. An equal thing rather than something new.
Well, just I think the argument, the other side of that argument, is that a lot of the Republicans and loyalists who were terrorists went to prison and got out, but a lot of the soldiers who did things never have gone to prison.
Right, well, that's fine, but if you're going to get, I think, in my opinion, if all those soldiers are arrested and charged, then all the terrorists should be readmitted to finish their sentences.
Okay.
I think that's a long look at it. But thank you, thanks for giving me a chance to speak.
Not a bother.